Let's start with opening prayer. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, Beloved Jesus Christ,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
Dearest Mother,
Dearest Mother,
Beloved David,
Beloved David,
Saints and Sages of all religions,
Saints and Sages of all religions,
bow to all of you,
bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple. My heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king. Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Peace. Bliss.
Amen. Do a little short meditation. Our Bible reading this evening is from Matthew chapter 6, beginning with verse 6. But thou, when thou prayest, enter into thy closet, and when thou hast shut thy door, pray to thy Father which is in secret, and thy Father which seeth in secret shall reward thee openly. But when ye pray, use not vain repetitions, as the heathen do, for they think that they shall be heard for their much speaking. But not ye therefore like unto them, be ye not there like unto them, for your Father knoweth what things ye have need of before you ask them. So verse 7 mentions not to use vain repetitions. And of course, the word vain is what's important there. Repetitions, all religious people use, have people who use those repetitions, or they certainly support them themselves. But vain repetitions is not knowing what you're saying, thinking that that a parrot could be taught these things and gain realization, could be taught a chant or a mantra. As Papa always tells the story of, you know, and what the parrot can gain, what merit the parrot can gain. But I love the other part. But thou, when thou prayest, enter into thy closet. When thou hast shut thy door, pray to thy Father which is in secret, and thy Father which seeth in secret shall reward thee openly. It's amazing. These are people who know what God experience is. I've got a little story to read from Bob Ramers that I told you about last time and didn't do a very creditable job of it. It's quite good, and this is something that we had printed up quite a while ago. I think this is when we met Bob in 1998 or so. And David and I and Kate and spent some time up at Song of the Morning Ranch, where Yogi Shoya Black had a retreat center. But Bob's first meeting of Master and his interest in Kriya Yoga is quite interesting. And he wrote this up in detail. I heard it from him just in a private conversation. And but it's nice to hear it written down, trying to get all the feelings exactly right. He says, so this is 1951 he met him. That's interesting that was just a few months before our Master's passing, perhaps, depending on what time of the year. I met, so this is called Bob Ramer's Introduction to Master and Kriya Yoga by Bob Ramer, disciple of Paramahansa Yogananda and spiritual director of Song of the Morning Ranch until his passing in 2008. I met Master in 1951, and I had previously read Autobiography of a Yogi. And the thing that struck me about that book, the whole book struck me, obviously, I felt tremendously uplifted, as most of us who have read it. When I read the book, other than feeling Master's presence and feeling an awakening, the thing that really struck me was the part about Kriya Yoga. I had tried to practice meditation before. I hadn't had any teachers. I just read books. I had studied the Vedanta philosophies. I was very involved with Ramakrishna and other saints like that. I knew I had to learn how to meditate, so I would try to practice. I would try to sit down for 10 minutes or half hour a day at least. Then that would go on for a while, but my mind was so restless. I couldn't do it anymore. I'd stop, then I'd get mad at myself. I'd write these notes. I hereby swear I'm going to meditate at least 10 or 15 minutes a day daily. And then all of a sudden, I'd flunk out again. But after reading Master's book, I thought, this is the key. Kriya Yoga practice is exactly what I need. So I wrote to him, and I said, Master, please, by return airmail, he puts in parentheses, I was kind of naive, send me instructions how I may do this Kriya Yoga. So then I got this whole packet from SRF about joining the organization, taking the lessons, and so on. There was no letter from Master, just something from the headquarters. And I really wasn't interested in joining any organizations or having anything to do with churches. This was back in, it must have been 1949 or 1950, somewhere in there. So then I sort of dropped the whole thing. One cold winter in 1951, my wife and I decided we wanted to get out of Minnesota and to have a vacation in Phoenix. I had an airplane at the time, and we flew out in my airplane and got there on a Saturday. We saw this little ad in the paper, Self-Realization Fellowship, and that kind of caught my eye. My wife said, we ought to go to that church and see what it is like. And we had a big debate because I wanted to stay in the sun. We had very little sun in Minnesota, but she directed me to go. So anyway, we went to church that next morning, and as the service started, I started feeling happier and happier. When Herbert Fried, the minister, started singing Door of My Heart, well, I just felt like my whole heart was beginning to open. And it really was a strange sensation. I just felt something stirring there. I didn't know what it was. So I got very interested in what was happening to me. I was very confused and never had anything like that happen to me before. I got to talking to Herbert after the service, and he invited me to come over in the afternoons, and we could start to talk about these things. I said, well, I want this Kriya Yoga. He said, well, I can't give it to you now, and not without Master's permission. I'm not qualified to give it. But, he said, we'll just see what happens. Anyway, I went over Monday, and I went over Tuesday, and he came out. His eyes were as big as saucers. You'll never guess what happened, he said. Master called me about 3 o'clock this morning, and he said to bring you and Mrs. Raymer to Los Angeles immediately. I don't think Herbert had mentioned my name or anything, but Master just called up and told him what to do. So the next day, we all climbed into my airplane and flew over to Los Angeles. Master wanted both of us, my wife and I, to take a tour. He wanted us to go to the Hollywood Church. He wanted us to go down to visit the Lake Shrine and also the one in Long Beach. He gave instructions and provided a car, which picked us up at the hotel. After we went to all these different places, we were to meet back at Mount Washington for a visit with Master. Well, my wife, Betty, decided that she hadn't seen her Aunt Gertrude for a long time, and she didn't want to go. I think it was about 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. We arrived at Mount Washington in the afternoon, so they put me in the chapel there. They wanted me to stay there, and then he puts in quotes, Master will call you. Well, I went into the chapel, and I waited, and I waited, and I waited. And I thought, oh, my God, he's clairvoyant. He's omniscient, and he sees what a mess I am, and he's decided not to see me. All these weird thoughts were going around in my head. Just about the time I was ready to give up all hope, somebody came in and said, Master, we'll see you now. So we marched up those flights of stairs to the 3rd floor of Mount Washington, and I was really getting nervous. Because my concept of a master is that he knew everything, and to me, it was even greater than seeing the President of the United States, or anybody I could even imagine in this world. A full-blown, honest-to-God master. To see a big man like that was almost more than I could conceive of. When I got up to the 3rd floor, I was shaking. All of a sudden, the door opened, and there was Master. He had a big smile on his face, and he just grabbed me and pulled me into his arms. And I felt such incredible love from him. He was so beautiful, so incredible. It wasn't anything he did or said, but it was what he radiated. It was just like he had hit me on the head with a baseball bat. It just about knocked me out. He sat me down and started to tell me all kinds of things about my life. Some of them I had forgotten. He touched on a lot of different things. He hit the nail right on the head, and some things really hit me deeply. I haven't spoken about these things. These were things he knew about me that were very private. And you know, he told me in such a beautiful way that it was just incredible. He kind of shocked me. But he did everything with such love. And then he ordered some tea for us. So somebody brought in some tea with those little biscuits and baklavas and sweets. He would put these baklavas in my mouth. So this is how I met Master. During this conversation we were having, I said, Master, I want to know how to do this Kriya Yoga. Will you teach me how to do this? And somehow he just managed to always change the subject. And so I'd ask him again. And this time he got a little irritated about this. And I thought, oh boy, what am I going to do? And then he'd change the subject. He'd get off on something else. Finally, I don't know how I had the nerve to do it, but I asked him one more time, Master, when can I get this Kriya Yoga? And he said, all right, tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock. Master put me down on my knees, and he gave me the blessing. I was right in front of him. He was sitting on the chair. He grabbed both of my hands together, and he kept repeating, Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, Jesus, Babaji, Lahiri Mahasaya, and so forth. He kept repeating those names. He must have gone on, I don't know how long. It seemed endless. And I was feeling this energy in my body. It was really incredible. The next day, I had the Kriya instruction. I had it in the morning. There was a Reverend Bernard who used to be there, and I believe we did it in the Hollywood Temple. I wasn't really bowled over by it or anything like that. And I had a lot of business I was doing that day, so I didn't practice at all. I just got the initiation. I decided that evening I really wanted to be alone, so I could do this Kriya practice and find out about it. After dinner that evening, we returned to the Hollywood Knickerbocker Hotel, where we had a suite of rooms, and Betty went to the bedroom. I got a chair out and put a blanket over the chair, and then I started to practice the Kriya, the technique. I started doing a few of these things. Well, all of a sudden, something happened in my spine, and it felt just like a snake was going right up my back, and it was just wiggling. And when it got up to my forehead, my whole forehead opened up. It wasn't like the spiritual eye, but it was like the sun itself, just like a sunburst. It was an actual experience. It was like a hose with too much power, too much water going through it, would start to wiggle, and this was going back up my back. And when it got up to my head, well, then my whole head just exploded, and I fell off the chair. That was the first thing. I started moaning and groaning, making these weird noises, and I thought, oh my God, this is what I have been seeking. This is what I have been searching for all my life. I used to have a lot of ups and downs, like most of us, emotional swings, depression, and so forth. And I thought, from now on, no more of this. All I have to do is a couple of these Kriyas, and that's the end. And so that was my introduction to Kriya Yoga. Oh, that's beautifully told. He was quite a character. He says it was winter 51, and Master passed just 3 months later in March. Really, just two or three months later. And Master made him a minister before he passed. I really like this. It's so funny. Jill texted me and said she had some things that David had written for Kriya and Kriya preparation the day before, those kinds of things, or the week before. And I had just come across a bunch of these. And, I have access to some of David's disks, hard drives, and all of his documents. And so I just typed in Kriya, and I got hundreds, meaning if the file name had Kriya, not the contents, just the file name had the word Kriya, and I got hundreds of different things. He did so much with Kriya than David did. So this is June of 2002, and I'll just read the first page. Dear Kriya Initiates, you are entering a week filled with activity in preparation for Kriya Initiation. This is in Prince Rupert, yeah. Perhaps you have already been experiencing a build up to initiation. Resistive forces come into play when we move toward the light. Those forces can operate through people in our lives or situations that suddenly come up. It is a strange play of opposing forces that comes alive when we work for any good. Certainly beginning our practice of Kriya Yoga represents a powerful light in our spiritual development and will attract opposing forces. There are some who believe that if something is meant to be, it should come without effort. My own experience and that of many others has taught me that is not the case. Oftentimes when we stand on the threshold of something great, we encounter the most resistance. Persistency and patience are required to stay true to our purpose. You have shown a degree of that purpose in order to be here. Kriya Yoga is a gift, the greatest gift we may receive for our spiritual development. It should be entered into with a serious intent to make this practice a part of our lives. The more we develop spiritually, the more we come to know how important it is when we make commitments. Kriya Initiation is a commitment you make to God and to yourself. The techniques of Kriya are surprisingly simple to learn, but like many disciplines, its practice entails a lifetime of refinement and advancement. In Kriya practice, you will be working directly with the spine and the brain, the instrument of intuitive knowledge. For most, those channels in the spine and brain are lying dormant. Through Kriya, those centers are awakened, opening new avenues of awareness. Mother asked us to abide by three rules when we took Kriya Initiation. No smoking, no drinking or use of recreational drugs, and no sex without benefit of marriage. You will make a promise to practice this method of meditation and let go of any other breathing and meditation exercises. This promise is for your own protection, as to mix other techniques can create problems that can even be dangerous. The promise does not affect any religious practice you may currently be doing, but applies only to meditation and breathing techniques. Each evening, we will gather for learning a variety of techniques. Traditionally, these techniques are given orally. We hold by that tradition for these classes. However, you will also have the lessons from Yogananda to supplement these oral teachings, available for loan from your center leader. There will be time for questions and answers for each technique learned. These techniques are safe and powerful. They need to be practiced as they are taught to have full effectiveness. Then he goes on to talk about the plans for the week. Very powerful. Yes, it seems like that's so true, and he's really good for David to warn us that these things, the resistance should be expected. I think it helps so much to know that this is a normal part of growth in the path, that this resistance comes up in so many different ways. It comes up in the body itself, comes up in the mind, of course. And this spine and brain technique, this technique that deals with the spine and the brain like this, is very, very powerful. I've had some odd things happen over the years, and increasing my Kriya, number of Kriyas, and really having some odd experiences when doing some really bad, negative things, somewhat internal to me, but also externally in my own karmic path, my own karmic life. Very difficult tests and very difficult circumstances. And I just, the coincidence with the timing of the increase or a cessation for a while and starting again for being ill or something like that. I just know that you have to be very careful. And that's why the first time you taught just to do 14 Kriya breaths and you can be increased over the years to a maximum of 108. And Master really got after someone who was doing more than that. And gave him a hard time for practicing. He says, don't you know how dangerous this is? So we think, well, we're not practicing it very well, perhaps. But if you practice it well and you do more than you can sustain, more than you can handle, you really can see some things happen. It's really dealing with the karma of your own destiny, your own life here on earth. And it's hard to believe, but you will if you practice the Kriya breath properly. And it takes practice to get good at it. Sometimes you get one or two good breaths, good technique of the, and you feel it when you do a set of them. So it's really, really good to not just knock them off and count them off so much as try to get the breath to be just right, get the technique down. And isn't that interesting what Bob Raymer had happened to him? How many people have that kind of experience? Not many. It's interesting to see David talk about the different techniques that you're going to learn. Most of you have taken these classes, and so I feel a little remiss in not having done so, but we did get the spiritual eye technique from David a week or so ago. But tonight, Jill is going to teach Hong Sa, and she's done this before for David. And you can start whenever you like, Jill.
So the last, I think, three Kriyas David had me join him and help him. And teaching the Hong Sa was part of that. So I know almost everyone, I think everyone has learned the Hong Sa. But it took me until about 8 years ago, I think, to actually feel like I was doing it correctly and getting anywhere. So I think we can always learn more and focus ourselves better around this technique. I'm going to read the lesson from Master to start with. This lesson teaches you how to switch on or off the life current from the bulb of the body, the muscles, senses, heart, spine, and so forth at will, and how to bring about perfect relaxation. Inattention during practice of these exercises produces sleep. Concentrated attention will bring a tingling sense of divine life to every body cell. So if you aren't having that happen when you're doing the Hong Sa, you can get better at it. Sit erect wherever you are with the spine straight and relax. Close your eyes or concentrate the gaze of your half-opened eyes up on the point between the eyebrows. Then, with the greatest calmness, feel your breath as naturally going in and coming out. As the breath comes in, move the index finger of your right hand toward the palm and mentally chant Hong. Rhymes with song, without moving the tongue. As the breath goes out, move the index finger away from the palm and mentally chant Sa. The movement of the index finger is only to differentiate inhalation from exhalation. When you can mentally differentiate inhalation from exhalation, then the movement of the index finger is unnecessary. Do not in any way use mental will or force to send your breath in and out. While practicing, take the calm attitude that you are a silent observer of your natural breath, coming in and going out. a rhythmic movement of which we are generally not conscious. So let's just take a little while and try that. The most difficult thing is when you place your attention on the breath is to allow it to remain natural. We start to want to control it and manipulate it. And all we want to do is add the hong to the incoming breath and the sa to the outgoing breath. If you're having difficulty with that, this will sound silly, but you can think about snoring, fake or real snoring, and how we have the but instead of those noises, just add the hong, sa. The natural inhalation is about half as long as the natural exhalation. While practicing, take the calm attitude that you are a silent observer of your natural breath coming in and going out, a rhythmic movement of which we are not generally conscious. You can practice these exercises anywhere, anytime, day or night, in your leisure time. By continued proper practice, you will feel a great calmness, and gradually you will realize yourself as soul, superior to and existing independently of this material body. Hong and Sa are two sacred chanted words from Sanskrit with vibratory connection with the incoming and outgoing breath. All sounds of the universe have a different mental effect and mental correspondence. The mental repetition of Hong, Sa has a great calming mental effect and helps the student in this exercise of watching the incoming and the outgoing breath. David talked about how these Sanskrit words are spiritualized by the masters that have come before us. Both in chants and in Hong Sa, they've used these words and this vibration to take themselves all the way to God. And in doing that, they've created a pathway so that when we chant these words, it's as if there's a great force that we've come to. And when we meditate, we're just trying to get through the forest and get through to the other side without any real way of knowing how to get through. And these chants and these techniques that we're taught are paths that have been first created by the masters ahead of us and then well-worn. And so simply by recreating the sound within our own consciousness and connecting it with the breath, which is what connects us to the infinite, this body to the infinite, we're able to go much more quickly. The more effective way to practice this technique of concentration is to sit on a straight-backed chair with a woolen blanket placed over it and running down underneath your feet to insulate your body from earthly magnetic influences and disturbances. And I would encourage you, if you have never tried this, to give it a try, to create a space, even if it's just through the use of a woolen blanket, that the vibration is only of the highest sort. face the east and sit erect, without touching your spine to the back of the chair. This exercise ought to be practiced during your leisure periods, either when you are on a bus or streetcar, or when you are sitting anywhere doing nothing. Just watch the breath and mentally chant, Hong Sa. Hong Sa. Not moving fingers or closing the eyes or fixing the gaze between the eyebrow, which might attract the attention of people around you. Just keep your eyes open without winking, looking straight ahead at some particular point. Always keep the spine and the head in a straight line during practice. The importance of the straight spine is that that is really the gateway to this practice. And so having a straight spine allows the energy to move smoothly and freely. What Kriya and the other meditation practices and chanting do for us, if we focus on the spine when we're doing them, is they allow us to break through those roadblocks as if a river was dammed up with logs that had fallen there. And it allows everything to flow smoothly, freely. And each time we do these practices, we help clear that out. That's why we start to feel sometimes pressure at different points in our spine, at the spinal centers. There are blockages there. And until they're cleared, there can be pressure there. So just keep with the practice. The purpose of this practice is to gain conscious passivity. It teaches one how to free one's attention from sense entanglements. Breath is the cord that binds the soul to the body. Man lives in and requires the atmosphere of air, just as a fish needs water. When he learns to rise above breath, man ascends into the celestial realms of the angels. By watching the course of the incoming and outgoing breath, the breath naturally slows down and calms the violent action of the heart, lungs, and diaphragm. The heart pumps about 18 tons of blood a day and gets no rest at night, as the other organs do. Hence, the most overworked organ in the body is the heart. And this teaching teaches a scientific method for resting the heart, thus increasing longevity and liberating a tremendous amount of life current, which is then distributed all over the body, recharging, revitalizing, and renewing all the body cells, preventing their decay. This marvelous Hong Sa exercise is one of the greatest contributions of India's spiritual science to the world, as it teaches one how to lengthen the span of one's life and shows the practical method of rising above body consciousness and realizing oneself as immortal spirit. In sleep, we experience sensory relaxation. In death, complete relaxation involuntarily takes place due to the stopping of the heart's action. If one can learn to control the heartbeat, he can experience conscious death, as St. Paul did, and as many of the yogis of India did who practiced this Hong Sa exercise, and through it, achieved mastery over the action of the heart. Such yogis learned to leave the body voluntarily, honorably, and gladly, and were not thrown out roughly or taken by surprise by death when the lease on their body temples expired. When the heart rests, breath becomes unnecessary. The life energy is then withdrawn from the heart and the sensory nerves and thus disconnects the telephones of the five senses, which ordinarily keep the ego perpetually disturbed and the attention scattered by incessant messages from the outside world. Through sensory disconnection, through hong, sa, sensation ceases to arouse thoughts, which in turn cease to arouse the subconscious mind by associated thoughts. The attention thus becomes scientifically free from all distractions, and the student is ready to go on to advanced practice. Best times to concentrate. The four times of change during the day correspond to the four seasons. Noon is summer, 6 p.m. is the rainy season, or fall, midnight is winter, and early morning is spring. There are four changes which invade the body during these four magnetic seasons of the day. The purpose of these exercises is to realize the changelessness in the four changing periods of the body by vitalizing and magnetizing it with life currents and cosmic consciousness. These currents arrest change and suspend the decay in the cells. Therefore, it is best to practice the changelessness-producing exercise four times a day to obtain satisfactory scientific results. Meditate between 5 and 6 a.m., 11 and noon, 5 and 6 p.m., 10 and midnight, or 11 and 12. Or when you do. Master asks for the impossible and he may get the possible. And so the other time to use Hong Sa is when you're unable to do Kriya for reasons of illness or a lack of privacy. So we can substitute sometimes the Hong Sa for the Kriya. Master called it the mini Kriya. The four states of consciousness. The material state of consciousness is marked by the complete identification of consciousness with material struggles and acquirement of material things. This is the state of gross businessman who never tries to understand the power behind his brain, without which no business can be carried on. In the second state, the devotee, by concentration, tries once in a while to get away from the senses. In the third state, the yogi, by concentration, reaches the middle point, where he finds, in glimpses of bliss, his good and evil tendencies evenly matched. This is the result of steady concentration and proper schooling in the habits of silent concentration. In the fourth state, when consciousness becomes completely one with the only good or God, the devotee goes beyond the opposites of good and evil. When awakening in God, the dualities of dreams of good and evil vanish, as do the sorrowful and joyful experiences of disease and health or death and life in a dream vanished upon awakening from sleep. And the affirmation, teach me to know that thou art the power that keeps me healthy, prosperous, and seeking spiritual truth. Are there questions or comments about the Hong Sa? If you're wondering something, probably two or three other people are as well. So feel free to speak up.
The Hong Sa is okay to do when you're in bed?
Yes. It's one of the few meditations that's fine to do in a, Michelle's commenting on the fact that you can be laying down. And yes, Hong Sa is okay to do laying down.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Kriya, however, is not.
So then this meditation would be good to do after we do our Kriya breaths, which will prepare us for meditation, right?
It's if you find the mind wandering, Hong Sa is a great way to bring it back. It's also good to do before Kriya to prepare your mind to calm it before you start the Kriya so you can stay focused during that.
That's a good tip. Thanks, Jill.
As often as you like.
As often as you like. You can't do too much Hong Sa, David said. It's not, I think it's just gentler. That's maybe the easiest way to put it than Kriya. Larry, maybe you have a...
You're going to be breathing anyway, so...
Yeah, you can always add the Hong Sa to it.
Right. It does bring you awareness of your breath, and that's always good.
Yeah.
Makes a meditative state.
Rebecca, I can see that you're talking, but we're not hearing you.
If your spine is straight, is it okay to have it touching the back of the chair?
For Hong Sa, so if you want the highest value from your Hong Sa, the straight spine is going to be the best, but it's better to do a comfortable Hong Sa than not. So if you're just relaxing, you've had a long day at work, and you find maybe your mind is fretting or just not calming, to just get in a comfortable position, and as you breathe, add the Hong Sa. And you just feel the whole body calm down. And I'm saying it out loud just to demonstrate, but as it says, you'll be thinking it without moving the tongue. So just bringing the thought of the word to the breath. That's where it's really useful to just notice the breath first and add the words. So as you notice the air coming in through your nose, then you think of Hong. And as you feel it start to release from the lungs, add the Sa. Master is, so that lesson is from his early lessons that he was sending out to people who are just learning to meditate. And so his focus is very much on helping people understand how important straight spine is. And so that was their early meditation lessons. And then that was literally lesson, I think 20 or 25. Yeah, Connie's. Thank you. And then the Kriya is not till 150. So he was trying to establish, good practice in meditation long before the Kriya. So, once you've been meditating for quite a while, you understand the difference between kind of, if you want to say serious meditation and more casual meditation. And so I think it's much safer to share that that's okay to do without the more formal asanas.
Is there any value to doing the Hong Sa while you're more active or under more strenuous activity, whether it's walking or exercise, or does that kind of cancel it out?
I think it wouldn't hurt anything. I would try it and see how you feel. It may be difficult to do. Go ahead, Con.
David used to tell me it could be like the tape of the Rom Nom. It's in the back and it's there.
The important part is to connect it to the incoming and outgoing breath. And that's where my sense is that if you're doing something more strenuous, it might be easier to chant than it would be to mentally chant than it would be to mentally do the Hong Saw. And so I would encourage you to try both.
I was just going to say that's what I've always found is that when I'm active, that chanting is much more, it just seems to work much better. Mm-hmm. And that because your breathing slows down, you know, when you're meditating, and it speeds up when you're quickly, and the chanting can kind of come at any speed. And I don't know, that's just what works for me if I'm being active at all to do the Rom Nom, because you don't have to do it with, you don't do it with your breath necessarily. You can, but you don't have to. And so it can just be running in there in the background all the time, like Connie said too. Now I might share something that I've had, that I had a lot of trouble with Hong Sa that I didn't have the problem with, Kriya because of the Kriya breath. But, when I learned Hong Sa and, Mother would say the word Hong comes at the end of the breath, you know, you breathe and then breathe in and then the Hong and then they exhale in the saw. And I kept finding that I was somehow controlling my breath as I watched it and was using the word. And it took an awful long time to not, I would find myself kind of breathless. Not in a good way though.
Yeah. And it's not after the breath, it's at the end. So the breath starts first.
Yes, but that took me a long time to really understand that.
Yeah.
Followed by the breath is what I think the terminology was that I learned, followed by the breath. So I kind of would do the breath and then in that way I was holding the breath somehow. Anyways, it took me a long, long time to really have Hong Sa work for me. Unlike Kriya, which immediately kind of worked for me. So I just shared that. I don't know if anybody else has had any problem like that, but.
I definitely took me a long time to get the coordination down. And that's where the kind of funniness of the act of snoring seemed to be the most natural thing that we do that kind of mimics it. You know, that there's that sound that comes on the inhale and then the different on the exhale. And so if you think about that being Hong and Saw instead of the snoring sounds.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. So are you saying that as that breath inhales, the Hong inhales, and as the breath exhales, leaves the body, Saw flows out with it?
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's the breath starts first and the sound follows the start. It doesn't follow the breath. So it, I just made that more complicated than it needs to be, but
there's a small time lapse.
Tiny, but yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. The word doesn't start first. The breath does.
Mm-hmm. But I think that's what was confusing for me initially when I learned it was the followed by. So it took me a long time to get it to work for me.
But they do happen. They happen at the same time. It's just that the breath leads.
Mm-hmm.
Is anybody having difficulty with that kind of coordination? You can just... And if you are, you can... And if anybody wants individual time with it, we can have time this weekend to just practice that in person. And I would say if it feels difficult, you're trying too hard. So that's the thing, is to just go back to just watching your breath and allowing it to happen naturally. And then as you notice the breath coming in, you think Hong. And as you notice it going out, you think Sa. And that it's should be very natural. But it, we can try and make it too difficult.
Yeah, I think the idea that it follows the breath is, as you said, is the right way to make it work effectively. Mm-hmm. You're already going to breathe anyway, and you just, you know, you tend to get your mind to follow. Oh, I'm breathing. Because you are, the good news, you already are watching your breath. And yeah, controlling your breath, perhaps too, is really clearly part of the story. But the if you were exercising or running or walking, certainly, let's just say walking, I don't see any harm from it. But it is mostly these things are to draw us inward. And it's usually have to, it takes a long time to be able to be drawn inward while acting outwardly and doing things outwardly and having your, but you know, it is funny how your mind can operate on two levels. You really can do these things with practice. I mean, people talk about the Ram Nam mantra being something they can do all the time, and it's always going in the background, and that's certainly true.
The other thing that David would talk about a lot, Kevin, to answer the idea of why you're doing something more active, and it's what's coming to me about the difference between Ram Nam or mantra and Hari Om Kani and Hong Sa. Hong Sa, I feel like, brings you up into the third eye and to that more elevated space. And Ram Nam can be more bhakti and through the heart center. And David would talk about when you want to feel God moving through you and feel in that elevated space, but be moving in the world, you want to do it from the heart center. And it allows you to operate on the more physical plane. And when we're, have that time and space to be in that more elevated place, then we want to be working through the Christ center, through the third eye, and that tends to draw us inward, and it's can be very difficult until we're at a very high state to be able to be functioning in the world and working through that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Happy to help.
I find it so interesting that the Eastern teachings really make you aware of your body and that connection of the body to the nervous system and that to the soul and then the spirit. But the Christian teachings, the monks, people who are ascetics and meditate, they have these things too. They tend to be more homegrown, and each teacher will teach things differently. Navel gazing is actually a practice, you know. So they tip their head down. It's very interesting. It really doesn't matter too much. One thing the master said about lifting your head and not is, he said that notice how people who are conceited raise their chin, raise their And that, what they're doing is they're pinching off the flow into the medulla. So you're as, and people who are subservient always bow the head and are, you know, completed, satisfied with external, with the energy coming into the medulla. So that's why we're always taught to keep the head in a neutral position.
David's thing was just slightly above neutral.
Right.
That neutral was at the horizontal plane, subconscious, and then just slightly. And if you're, when you're meditating, try that. You know, drop your chin, bring it to neutral, and then just raise it, oh, what, half an inch? Just a tiny bit, and see if you, just like as you're tuning a dial on a radio, see if you can't find a place where you feel that energy moving up the spine more smoothly.
Well, Hong Sao means I am he. And it also, as the Indians do, it's Paramhamsa is also sometimes pronounced that same way. And Hamsa, of course, is a swan. But there's, if you, you know, you talk to the right Indians and they have really elaborate understandings. And I don't mean to talk as though it's not a good thing. These are really interesting things about the body and the mind. And so it's interesting how, and some people reverse it. They say, you know, if you do Hong Sa as a chant or something like that, or I am he, you become he, I am, we become Soham. And there, Soham is one of the sacred words also. Master was supreme. Param is supreme. I am he. That he that he is, and that I that he is the the inner I, the true I, as Mother said, it was the perpendicular pronoun. Well, it's 8:40 now, but I just wanted to say a couple of things I found today, which I've known about for years, but it's kind of nice just to show them to people. So this is Mother's really early book of Kriya and teaching the things. So it's very tightly, unfortunately I've got that background thing there, but it's very tightly typed.
You're disappearing, Larry.
I know, I can see it. Isn't that strange what it does? You know, I guess I'm bringing it down here and you can't see the detail. But yeah. It's, and then when I go through the perceptive lessons chapter on the book six, the, where these things are, it's literally Mother typed it directly from the lessons, but brought it out just to teach Kriya with. So interesting. How much attention Mother and how much effort and what Mother did for us all. But that much help too, you know. She, as far as we know, taught Kriya maybe in the late 40s, but in the 50s. And then she was cut loose from 57 on and was on her own. But she had it all the things that Master gave her. Wasn't that interesting about Bob Raymer? Isn't that, I wonder what you guys all think of that. I mean, it's quite an extraordinary story. He's not a show-off at all. You know, when you meet him, he's really shy. And but this was his testimony. You know, this is what happened. It's an important story.
Yeah. 3 a.m., Master calls.
Yeah, and knows his name. Amazing. He was a master. So I'll say one more thing about Bob and then we can close up. He, you know, he hardly knew Master. He was only with Master just a few times. And excuse me. After he went home to Minnesota, he was supposed to be a minister and giving talks. And it petrified him. So he used to telegram Master every Sunday or whenever it was that he was giving a talk and say, please, Master, I'm going to give a talk starting at this time. Please think of me at that time. You can always feel Master's thoughts on him. That's the only thing that got him through.
He really wanted the Kriya, and, you know, the Kriya's been called the airplane route. And he had an airplane. And he even had an airplane in a time when very, you know, that was pretty darn unusual, right?
Yeah, that's true. You bet.
Still pretty darn unusual.
Not too many people owned airplanes in those days,
Yeah, now it's still unusual, but it was super unusual then.
Yeah. So many great souls came with Master this lifetime and in this work that he had to do.
I was just going to make a little comment about Hong Sa. What I really love about it is that because you're focusing so much on your breath, you do the inhalation, then you do the exhalation, and then the space between the next inhalation is long. Mm. It gives you that nice space.
That's a good point, yeah.
Yeah.
It's I can feel what you're saying,
yeah.
And that naturally starts to occur. So those who are just learning to practice this, don't focus on trying to hold your breath in between.
Oh, yeah.
It'll just naturally start to space out. But and that moment of peace in between.
You automatically get that moment of breath stopping at the end.
Yeah.
I remember my early experiments with meditating. I always found that I would go inward more easily as I let the breath out, you know, and then that's when I would feel it very strongly, just that relaxation or the tingle in the spine. And you know, you want to get to the point where it's effortless. Your body's not bothering you at all. And so that's where, when you meditate, if you can get to that point, you'll see it. You'll see, wow, I am just feeling, you don't have to feel blissful or ecstatic, but you will feel the body completely just not be bothering you. And it is an interesting thing that, when you can get yourself into the upper, reaches of the spirit, and you will and close things off below. It happens automatically. And yeah, Hong Sa and breathing in general, paying attention to your breath in general has this ability.
Thank you for pointing that out, Judy. It's a good reminder.
Yeah. Thank you, Jill. Very nicely done.
Only what David taught me.
Let's say Mother's closing prayer. Oh, Heavenly Father, Divine Mother,
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
I feel the wonder and the beauty
of thy glorious presence.
Of thy glorious presence
in every part of my being.
In every part of my being.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
And surrender myself to thee.
And surrender myself to thee.
I feel the power of thy perfection.
I feel the power of thy perfection.
Surging in every cell of my body.
Surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence.
My mind and my intelligence.
Are radiant with thy healing light.
Are radiant with thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss
of my communion with thee.
Of my communion with thee.
I and my Father are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am he.
Blessed Spirit, I am he.
Oh. Peace.
Peace.
Bliss.
Bliss. Amen.
I'll play some music as we go out, and you can leave as you feel. And we'll see you on Friday. Some more of us together, anyway. Not all. Some people will be following it with Zoom.